Down one right and beginning to visit with Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 72. Channel 1 right, and beginning of the visit was Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 72. Channel 1 right, and beginning of the visit was Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 72. Channel 1 right, and the beginning of our visit was Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon.
George Wade is going to be an administrator of some sort, I'm certain. He's developing the physique for it, and all the ability for it. He doesn't tend to get a whole lot of work done.
Oh, he's going to delegate.
Yeah.
And those other two kids just love to get into things, you know. They'll haul garbage around, move things. And he's forever and ever saying, well, he mumbles around until they get it all done. Complain mightily if he picks up one thing. He pick up something. Like it. Too heavy. He can put it back down, and Hal pick up four of them and leave. And I don't think there's too much chastisement you can do that corrects that nature.
Yeah, certain things can't be corrected. Suzanne doesn't know a thing about this. But she has worked with me on these other things that I've been doing. So we can sort of swap up. And now that town meeting is the thing.
That's right, interesting procedure.
Yes.
I would have thought a little town like that would be dull.
Well, that newspaper reporter finally got him down there. The last minute, he came down at 7:30, and he said he thought he'd be home asleep at 9:30, and he was still down there at 12, finishing up business at the local bar with us, and he was astounded. He wrote a big monster article on it. I tried to get with him a little bit, but he was too jumpy. He wouldn't listen at all,
yeah.
And I wasn't a prominent individual enough to pay attention to. And he did make a couple of mistakes, and that's what I was trying to avoid on it.
Yeah.
But, one in particular, very bad one, messed us up policy-wise. So, those things you got to watch out for. However, the public opinion is the thing that's broken the town open. They're very much afraid of being open. They're scared of it. They can't operate when they get out in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
They've always operated in that. You've been in the library over there.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's where they always held the meetings. And you got seven officials. And if you get three more people in there, it's crowded.
Yeah.
And when you had business, you'd walk in there and they'd open the meeting, mumble over the minutes. And then they say, did you want to say something? So you get up and say your piece, and they finish up with it and discuss it around and yay or nay it. And then more or less give you harumps and things like that. In other words, it's time to depart. You finish your business. You really got, if you walk in there, there's a strong feeling that you weren't invited. And you weren't welcome, and if you had something to do, do it and leave. And that's the way it was. I went two or three of them. See if I can catch a flea. Sprayed today for them, but I missed one. I just had to scratch. And that's the way Barr ran it the whole time, and Morganson took over right in his place. It was like
Bob was chairman of the trustees.
He missed a couple of times of being chairman. Other people slipped in once in a while, but for 40 years. 40 years he ran that place.
Yeah.
And Mortensen fit the form as though, like Barr cast it. And Mortensen plugged right in, and he was exactly like him. Never seen two things happen exactly like. Attitude, the emotions, demeanor. That's perfect. He just plugged right in. Didn't even change a bobble. same voice. You get sort of. So you knew him privately, Morrison. You didn't know him when he was being his public figure.
No, sir. I missed that. I laid off again and again and again to see that public figure.
Very different thing. Privately, it's the same way with me. We'd stand around Weaver's and talk about Crystal River because he's got a place down there when I was doing my great faux pas in Crystal River. And he's just as amiable, friendly. But he gets up there on the council thing with his public figure, and he's in control.
Yeah.
And he pushes.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely one way. You can sit there and talk to him, and he'll bump, he'll read things, mess around, then say, well, let's do this, that, and that, and you do that, and you do that. And that's it. Doesn't hear. Faulty hearing when he's public figure.
I'm sorry, I missed it.
Yeah, he's a very different person in public, or in that job.
Yeah.
That position stuff really does things to a lot of people. Some people are that way continually, whether they're in public life or not. Like Troy Blakely, he simply carries on like that, I'm sure, if he's talking about chickens, you know. I wish you could have heard his talk, but the way he talks, he's very
the
consistent.
Second part after the intermission.
Yeah. And swear to goodness, I mean, he works with the church, and I know they had to put up with him.
Well, now, kind of how did that you was behind it? Kind of how did that talk go?
Oh, beautifully well. And he followed it right down to the letter. He took it and wrote it down in his own handwriting.
Yeah, I mean, kind of lined it out for us.
You mean the content of it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. I can seldom ever remember anything I've written. it sort of started off that he had been informed that the meeting that he'd attended the week before was in violation of the Florida Sunshine Statute. And then it said what this violation implied, that they're subject to fine and imprisonment. And then he went on and unfolded a few more things like that. And then briefly what it was, that he asked the council to declare that meeting null and void so as to avoid all complications, just wipe it from the books, we'll forget about it, and we won't go through any of this nonsense. But if they wanted to try to make that meeting legal, then we'd be forced to bring suit against them. They complied. See, at that meeting, they signed a contract for that road.
So, the second road.
Yeah, the second road. So that meant that if they declared the meeting void, then the contract's void, because they engaged in it illegally. They were caught. They mumbled and groaned, and then he didn't even really need to get into it, but he had the public. See, we had it sectioned out that he was to do that, is to explain the law, explain what happened, not even mention the road, don't say anything, and then say, I'd like to make a motion that we declare that meeting void and all business that was pertaining to it, and then sit down. And see, we had a map prepared with the road on it, and all the sections blocked off and colored. Who was bordering this road and who belonged to it. And this was, I was very specific with him that we shouldn't get into disrupting feelings too much. If it's the right way to do it, if they'd comply with it, be quiet. If don't jump on anybody. But there was too much to resist. He had that. We mounted and picked the map, and he had to bring it out and start talking before he.
That would be hard to resist.
Oh, good Lord! But he did. He did sort of slow down on the names. He named the guys that weren't around. See, but he didn't name the people that were there. He wouldn't read the last part of the names, and everybody was saying, "Who's that?" You know, and he'd sort of mumble around, wouldn't answer him. He named Thrasher and Jim Daly, who owned something, and Eva Green, I think he named. They owned, the three of them owned approximately half of the footage on that road, or a little under it, a little under half, better than a third.
Well, everybody at the meeting already knew about the road?
They were pretty fired up about it. Yeah. They were
well,
out
that's
the
what you came for.
That was the big thing.
And you didn't know that, Scott.
Well, see, that was my mistake, timing, because I was anxious to get this planning thing underway, and I thought we'd get one more blow in, be 2 weeks ahead of time, and get a step done, but didn't work out that way. I just should have been quiet.
But now, is it Blakely couldn't resist that map?
No, he couldn't. He didn't have to touch that map. You know, the people were ready. They wanted to talk about it. They wanted to bring it out. And now, maybe he was right, but that's the... See, he made a good point by doing it for himself.
Showing
all this stuff, how it was prepared, and things like that. And this Bill Proctor is the one that does all the legwork, see.
Oh, yeah.
He'll put it all together. He'll come up with some of the ideas. I think he was the one that pushed about the sunshine law to start with. Everybody else knew it was illegal, but he decided we'd do it. So then we set about organizing it. Went down to the courthouse, got all the names, got the map, and mounted the map, you know, and wrote all the script that went along with it. It was right fun to do that.
Who got up the map?
Bill Proctor got the map, bought the map.
He did most of the courthouse work?
Yeah. I went down and did a little bit of it and looked around and said, well, that's obvious. But I didn't even look at the other end. So I was just looking at the end up towards the 7-Eleven store, Morrison's old place. And I sort of quit because I got into some of the colored folks' houses, see. And thought, well, that's all right, but this is enough. You don't need any more. The hell, on the other end of it, was the town clerk, Claire Cruz, on 420 feet on it. and Barr owned property on the road. And who else down at that end? There's a bunch of them down at the other end, which is over by the cemetery.
Or go with Claire on over there?
Right. That was one of their points, that the cemetery experienced a lot of traffic jams. So there's all the burying going on. And they thought it'd be better to route the cemetery traffic down that road straight to the cemetery, and they wouldn't experience quite so much traffic jam. Of course, we do have probably a burying a month at least, maybe one every other month. Well, it's really travel. And there's a town ordinance that you can't bury a black man in that cemetery. It's for whites only. That's in the city ordinance. That's written, that's a separate ordinance passed on that. Those ordinances are hilarious. I'll tell you, I could spend the rest of my life in jail if somebody tried to enforce them. They have an ordinance that specifically states that you're subject to fine and imprisonment if you don't follow your calling. It's written in the ordinance.
Chopping cotton.
If you don't follow your calling, you're done in. You're in violation of the town ordinance.
Yeah, I wonder what they mean by that.
Isn't that amazing? They got you boxed 100 ways if you wanted to back them up.
Yeah, now that's not a mechanic following his calling.
Well, I don't know what it means. Well, that's lumped in with vagrancy,
yeah,
a vagabond. a common night walker is against the ordinance. And the mayor's really upset about that because he walks every night and he doesn't consider himself an exceptional man. He says he got me on that one. He's got circulation problem and he walks every night before he goes to bed. Work up his circulation. Well, he's a common night walker. He can't figure out where he's not uncommon.
That's been there a good while.
Yeah, I think it's 55.
Well, that late.
Yeah.
19.
They went back to Beowulf or somewhere to pick up on some of these, some of the wording in there, I'm sure. It's funny. It really is. You can get right down to it. You probably, they all sort of missed it. Everybody was mully grubby, but that thing about the juke joint coming in, you know, I was saying that after the crate mill left, a fellow didn't want to do a crate mill, and somebody else bought it, and they put up a rock and roll joint with live entertainment, and that wouldn't help Micanopy at all because it's an ordinance that says that you can't frequent a place with live entertainment. So all you can get is the outsiders to come in and frequent the place because it's against the law for you to go there. It could be a concert hall for all that matter. You know, chamber music, that's live entertainment. It's against the law to go to it. Yeah.
And that's reason two.
Yeah. They just lumped it all together. Well, you know why they do that kind of thing. It's the dark politicians. It's a good control factor for them. When somebody gets bothersome, they can find a law that they can do them in on. It's no problem. They've got something back there. They can hunt around and get that law and lay it on.
Well, now 55 is. Things were pretty tense way on back then.
Yeah, yeah, that came, when was it, 53, was it? When was it, 54 was the integration pronouncement.
Yes, but a lot led up to it.
They hadn't shifted gears since then. This is really the first time.
Now, Suzanne hadn't heard anything about that first part either, Wade. Right, the time about the town meeting.
Oh, you mean the planning aspect of it?
Yes, any of it, you see. No, just the meeting itself is what.
Oh, the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I got the meeting. They tried to hold it downstairs. In the smaller room, finally got so many people there, they had to go up in the auditorium. I reckon they had at least 100 people there.
Yeah.
Nature. And it was only 90 people that voted for the last council elections. 90 people. They had more people attending there than voted. Which not too many places can say about town. And so they're milling around up there, and they kept messing around and mumbling about the meeting and whatnot. And finally somebody tried to get the meeting called to order, and the chairman says, well, it was illegal to call the meeting to order because the meeting was there to discuss general business, and you couldn't call a meeting to discuss general business. It had to be specific business. And so we finally got it sort of clear to him that there was a special meeting called to discuss general business, and that was a specific business was general business.
That's
where we got around it.
How about that?
See, in the charter it says if you call a special meeting that you've got to specify what you're going to discuss and discuss that only.
Yeah.
You can't discuss anything else. So we said we're going to discuss the general business.
And all the councilmen have to be there.
At a special meeting, I think. Except the mayor called a general meeting too. But this special thing was just to placate Morgeson. See, it also states that general meetings are to be held at least once a month. And the last meeting, we brought it up, and we needed more than one meeting. And Morrison just huffed right out the door about that. He said, no, that's written right in the charter. You can only have one meeting a month, and that's it. We can't have any more meetings. So the mayor and Bill and I got together and looked over the charter, and the charter says you have to have one meeting a month, but you can have a general meeting 24 hours a day the whole bloody month, if you want to call it. I mean, there's nothing that says you can't have more than one meeting a month.
Proctor.
Yeah, we rooted through the things and found that out. So, I mean, he's entirely within his rights to call a meeting. That's no problem.
Well, now, where is Proctor's headquarters, Wade?
He lives in Willie Wade Brinson's house, the black man that I mentioned to you before. This got such a good head. I'm just really impressed with that fellow.
And he lives in his house?
In his house.
With him?
No.
He rents
the house from him. Willie Wade lived there some time ago. It's right next to the cemetery. Set back from the road, right next to the cemetery.
Any other family?
No.
Yeah.
Impeccable morals, according to him.
Yeah.
And he's the one
calling
me?
No, the mayor calls him Micanopy's secret weapon. It's Bill Proctor. Because the question come up, he'll root around and find the answer to it and get all the material necessary to back it up and bring it all back out and give it to you. There's something in question. He saw. I called an attorney in town, matter of fact, city attorney, O.C. Fagan, and queried him on the matter. And then the next day, Bill went down and saw an attorney. And we checked that thing out and see where we were, see what was going on. And you always got to have these attorneys to give their word about something before people will believe you. You can't. It's impossible for you to sit there and read that thing and say, "Well, this is what it says," unless you have a law degree back of you.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not allowed to say that that's what that says. It's right amazing.
Yes, it is.
And most of it, if anybody reads, they can look over these things and they can see what it says and the form in which it's said and see whether it's obscure or not. And if it's obscure, you know that you can act on that obscurity, and later on it just has to be settled in court because nobody can say yea or nay, and it gets down to a fine point thing. I mean, it's just a very simple procedure, because you can tell it's obscure if it's a loophole in it.
Yeah.
Which most of them are written up with loopholes. They're all shut up.
Yeah.
You can work any way you want to. That's the reason I said to him that that it was Ward's fault that he was missing from the meeting and pardoned him, but you had a quorum there, and a quorum constituted a legal meeting. Let's get on with the meeting. If you want to question it, do it in court later on. No problem. But they welcome
Suzanne,
to the court.
For a long time after they started, it was all a point of order. Mr. Morrison raised the question with the mayor about whether or not he could call that meeting. And the mayor had a little slow on the draw.
Yeah.
And he seemed willing, but not, he didn't think fast. And he'd get up, and talk a little bit, and then he'd sit down and talk to Mr. Morrison.
Yeah, we worked on both those. Like Troy got his wires crossed, but he came out fine because he can do that 10-minute talk without saying anything. So he's got that ability. The mayor can't. He doesn't have that ability at all. Evidently, he's either a college graduate or has been to college, and he congratulated me very highly on my presentment of the first week. He said that 100 times. He said, "Wade, that's a fine presentment you made." I didn't. I don't know whether it's really a presentment or not. It might have been. And that's his character. He's really funny like that, and he is slow. I mean, he couldn't think on his feet at all.
And Morrison can.
No, but Morrison's got a background from which to work. He doesn't have to think. Oh, see, that's the difference.
Yeah.
See, this other guy's cutting new ground. And he doesn't have any reference. Morgeson's got that, he had that framework, the Barr's framework.
Oh, yeah.
And you can work right from a thing like that. That's that order. And,
yeah.
And it doesn't matter whose order it is. If you got it, you're in good shape. You can just work with it. If you don't, it's really hard to work.
Yeah.
I found that out for sure. You sure waste a lot of time without some sort of order about it.
That is, he's got that in his system, and
mm-hmm.
then with just a little reading up the charter and all, he could give us the direction he wants.
You read that charter exactly the way he feels. You see the words down there. I've done the same thing. Just pick out what I want and anything, use it. You're guilty of that, but of course, the stronger you are about things, that's just the way you look at it. It's like the folks working with the Bible all the time.
I thought one of the cutest things at the first ceremony, they couldn't get straightened out. The mayor picked out one man and handed him the little book that they keep up there, Robert's Rules of Order, and appointed him parliamentarian. Right there on the spur of the moment, he took it and took it back and sat down, didn't he? Now that was your real estate man, or over in front of you.
Yes, the Shimwell.
Shimwell.
The hope was that he would try to work on that and be somewhat quiet, but as you noticed, he never called a point of order, especially after you left, because he's trying to pass his bar exam now, and he's known as a lawyer, but I think he really flunked out of law school. But the guy has no intelligence. Not the slightest grain of common sense or intelligence.
Oh, he's studying law.
Oh, yeah. He's been in... Theoretically, I don't know whether he really graduated or not, or whether he busted out on his last term or something like that.
In college or in law school?
Law school. Oh, yeah. He went into law school.
Well, you know, it's hard to get into law school now. They have 700 applicants and 200 places.
Well, all I can say is the man doesn't evidence any sincere intelligence at all. It's funny, the mayor is so funny about that. And you see, this guy, Shimwell, is a member of the establishment, you might say, although not their establishment, but he's a moneyed person. And he doesn't appear to do anything unusual, you know, like the long-haired hippies would be doing. And the mayor one day just calls me over there and says, "Wade, now tell me the truth. Do you think Shimwell's on dope?" No, wait, first he says, "Do you think Shimwell's drunk all the time?" I said, "Joe, I've been around him two or three times, and I've been drinking beer, and he won't drink it. He'd drink the Coke. I know he does drink, but I don't think he stays drunk. I don't know if he ever gets drunk. He's a social drinker. He's drinking at the party." I don't really think so. He said, "Well, you think he's on dope?" I said, "I really don't think he's on dope. I think that he wouldn't have anything to do with dope." Because I really don't. I couldn't say for sure because I don't know him. And then he got off and says, "Well, don't you think he's on tranquilizers or something?" He just couldn't believe that this man could be alive and act the way he did. He refused to accept it.
Now that was the mayor?
The mayor.
This mayor?
Right. Joe Thomas.
He couldn't.
He could not.
Get it in his head.
He couldn't accept this man's action at all unless he was doing some deviant behavior that would upset mental balance. That's true. And it was
Where
really
did
funny.
Where did he get the money? He's a money man.
He married it. And a whole bunch of it at that. He had 20-something carriages over there in that old building. Weaver's old store, the one across from me, sold them to Horn of the Horn's Motor Lodge for $2,000 apiece. Hell, he has a whole fleet of Clydesdale horses. And, you know, you don't make money with those things here in this country.
No.
Those are monsters.
They'd make these two horses, big worth horses, look small.
Yes, sir. That thing, they scare me just to look at them. They are huge. The young one, the colt, he said he had another 6 inches to grow, and I can stand up, and the low part of his back comes right here.
Right at your nose.
I can see, I can just look right over the low part of his back, and he's still got 6 inches to grow.
There's your eye level.
And that's not his shoulder. That's where he sags a little bit on his back.
Now, he doesn't keep them right there.
Oh, he had a, they were breaking out the other day. I had to go help him catch them. I had two. The mare was in the heat, and the young stud, he didn't know what he was doing too well. It was his first encounter. And all they'd do is just tear up the world. But after they finally packaged him up, sent it. He's got a place down by Irvin, at 90 acres over there. That's where he wants to move this house to, see, out there. But that's sort of his story. But what a cantankerous soul! He's right amazing. He's straightforward in what he does, but he has no care or concern for anyone at all. He just doesn't care.
Anything he does, he'll tell you.
He'll tell you. He loves to brag about it. He loves to brag about it. He's not secretive about it. The majority of his work.
He'll tell you he wants to take the house off and then sell the lot from what he gave for the house and lot and then get a
7-Eleven to come in there.
And he'll tell you.
You should have heard him come over one day and try to convince those long-haired boys that live next door, four or five of them, trying to run that shop. And they don't have a dime. And they're not the least bit interested in investing anything. You know, they're still sort of backwatering a bit, pedaling backwards. They're not looking anywhere. And he tried to convince these guys that they ought to pay $15,000 for that property. He said, you can get some money together. You guys can do this. Had them all sitting on the bench out there. And he was serious. And he was doing a monster sell job.
To tell them where it would be to their interest.
Absolutely. That's where I told you that about his attitude about land as opposed to the locals' attitude about land. And he picked up some of the dirt there and said, see that? That's power. You know, and he's doing the dirt. And that's the way he considers it. It's not like these guys, they're like Freddie over here at all.
Well, now, who are these fellows he's talking to?
Oh, they run that little craft sort of shop that's downstairs in my place. And a couple of them fairly serious about working. They're getting along all right. A couple of them are just, they need a lot of help. One of them is just has to have a full-time nursemaid. And he always will, to the best of my knowledge. He's an 8-year-old. 6'2" boy.
Oh, you mean really?
Oh, yes. Matter of fact, he's son of the head of psychology department.
Does he live out there?
Yeah, he lives next door at the gallery building.
Can he take care of himself?
Not too well. And he's seen. Oh, he's been seeing psychiatrists and all this nonsense.
Yeah.
But he's just had too much help all of his life. And he can't get out from under it.
Well, do they call him a hippie?
Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah. Matter of fact, wasn't too happy about him being down there. He and another fellow. These other guys are all right because they're workers and pay attention to what they're doing. But this guy tends to get all been out of shape and act crazy once in a while and stagger all over the place. He consumes enough tranquilizers to kill you.
Oh, really?
Oh, and he was strung out on drugs about 3 or 4 years ago and got that done with, but he's taking tranquilizers because he's a nervous person. The doctor gives him, some fool doctor's always giving him too many tranquilizers and he'll store them up and just take a bunch of them and just do himself in. it's really sort of pathetic when you see somebody really done in on those things.
But the other three, still, they went up to...
Oh, no.
Business club.
And I told him, there's no way. He asked me, you know, what about that? And I said, there's no way these guys are going to even consider that. But he came over there, and he had his rate book. You know, he loves his rate book. $15,000 for 10 years at 8%. So much a month. You know, that thing's always flipping that out. He loves that thing. And he got into, he said, well, you know, I'm an aesthetic person. I appreciate fine things. I've got a Lincoln Signature. And that was his claim to appreciation, that he got the Signature by Lincoln. I almost collapsed on that one.
Now, where were you all that time?
Oh, I was sitting by listening to his sales talk.
And he's serious.
I mean,
to himself. He is serious.
He don't mind his audience. No. He's dead serious.
You the only one?
Well, I imagine a couple other people hanging around there. But I'll be dogged. He was serious. He says, I know it's too much money for that property. That's no problem, but I can sell it to you right. So he can sell it right. I mean, he don't have to get it all of his money at one time. You can pay a little bit from now until you die. And that makes you able to afford the property.
Does Buster take to him?
Lord knows. There's nobody in that town that'll touch him. I won't have anything to do with him.
He talk to him?
Oh, he busts in on him. And everybody will sort of sidle around until he leaves.
Buster?
Well, Buster will tend to cut him off. Buster's pretty good about that if he doesn't care for anybody.
Well,
he'll be short with him.
He can be short.
Oh, yes. He can be short. He can get huffy.
Yeah.
It's sure not in his character to do it. He's the most easygoing person I've ever seen in my life. One of the most consistent individuals.
Yes.
He hasn't deviated. Oh.
But you've seen him cut him off.
Yeah, he'll get huffy with somebody he doesn't care for. Somebody's in there messing around with his tool or something, not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Make him mad. He'll get upset about it.
He doesn't know.
Yeah, he'll tell him. He'll tell him in a funny way, too, sometimes. You know, that'd be a cutting remark. But he'll run him right out.
But they'll get it.
Yeah.
The shim will get it?
No, that guy's beyond any of that stuff. You really sort of, he's the person you need the big sledgehammer to get a point across.
Well, Buster sent me packing several times. Yeah, for a while, this old red Chrysler, it wouldn't stay tuned. I'd get Buster to tune it. He'd come over here, I'd stop over there, and gee whiz, before I'd get back from town, you see, it'd be sluggish again. And, you know, I found that a mechanic can take one ailment just so long, and if he can't fix it, he just had enough of that one ailment. Well, I brought it over there one time, and I said something to him, and he was sitting in that little truck of his, and he says, some people know so damn much about all these automobiles, they ought to go out there and fix them themselves.
Yeah.
That sound right?
Yeah. There you go.
He said it with pepper.
Right. That's what I mean about he didn't tell you to go to hell.
No.
Just, you know, get away from here.
But I didn't come back. Well, do you know what was wrong with it? It's something, I told you that, I think. It's something that is next to impossible to find. There wasn't anything wrong with the machinery at all. The points was fine and the chain was fine and all like that. Those rubber coated wires that go to the spark plugs had rotted out. They wouldn't carry a charge.
Right. Had to replace it.
And they couldn't find it. And what I did, I let Cookie keep the car for 3 or 4 days. And I went in there one day, and he was just working madly over that. That's when he owned that little gas station there at in town on 13th Street. He just mad. And I saw all them wires thrown around there, and there he's sticking in new wires. He had found out what it was. And he couldn't wait to get those wires in. And as soon as he did that, it's been over a year now, and it hadn't missed a lick.
You know something else? Buster said that's the last car he's ever bought for anybody. That did him in. He quit. Talks about going up and getting, helping you get that car and then getting all this stuff out. He said, as soon as he bought it, it fell apart. Last time I'll ever do that. He's something else. But he's really no mechanic, Buster. Hell, he doesn't even have a feeler gauge to set points with.
Oh, no.
He'll just say, well, I think that's about right. You know, some points set at 22, and some of them 38, some of them 16, and there's a hell of a difference in setting points. You get them so they look like they're about right, and set it down there. Now, if you're really good and familiar with these machines and got an eye for it, you can get close to it. But Buster's still in the Model A world.
Cookie won't use a machine on those points, either. Old Fred down here, I know all the high class ones at the junkyard.
Mm-hmm.
He won't use one.
Oh, you fell out with Jarhead too, didn't you? Isn't that his name? Jarhead? Jughead?
No, he fell out with me.
Oh, he fell out. I had a call to go down to see him about a year and a half ago, something like that. I've forgotten when it was. A friend of mine was looking for some plow disc, an old rusty plow disc. And he got talking, took us out back there and showed us those boats. Have you ever seen those things in that shed? Good Lord Almighty. He's got an old wooden boat back, inboard wooden boat that must have been running in 1910 with an engine that doesn't even look like an engine. He's got story after story about those. A dugout canoe with an inboard engine in it. Be damned if they used to go out and hunt ducks on these big duck hunting parties with these monster shotguns. And absurd, you know, before they outlawed that business. It's a strange world. Let's walk up and see that kind of thing out there.
No, that's my luck, you see. I can carry on with them so long, then they find me out, or think they do. And in Jarhead's case, this fella that was living here was just taking me for a ride. And Jarhead had an old tractor down there that he wanted $50 for. And this fella come down there, and he jacked the price up and got $250 for it. And the fella brought it up there and just as pleased as punch with it. And while he was down there, he gave, you see, he and I were just scrapping all the time. That's the first big scrap I ever had out here was with him. Real scrap. And I'm telling you, he was a little fella, but you talk about he could break a bull's neck. When I'm out scrapping, I stay way off over there. Anyhow,
you got to watch these guys sometimes. Don't get them too rough.
Well, he's professional. he was one of the best. I learned a great deal from him. And he let Jarhead know what went on up here, you see. And they can do it. You take a fellow like that, he can pass the word on fast. And I'm the one that told him where Jarhead was. You see? And Jarhead's one of my buddies. I'd go down there and sit and talk to him, and he'd do anything for me. But not after that fella got...
Goodness. Yeah. That day, the people you're working with got an awful high suspicion factor about anybody or anything that doesn't fit with...
Yeah, yeah. Anything associated with the university.
Old Mac, he came over the other day talking about his dogs. That was the day he gave me all those stories about the produce place and his wife stealing from Till and all that stuff. And he says, what's guy up to? Mr. Miles, he called him. What's Mr. Miles up to? He says, how come he comes around here and talks to me like, he says, I hadn't done anything, have I? I hadn't done anything. And he suspects you're trying to get some information out of him about something he's done. And I said, no, Mac, that's not it. Guy just wants to talk. He just wants to talk. People don't talk much anymore. He likes to hear people talk. He said, well, he can't talk. I said, yeah, that's why he wants to hear him talk.
Suzanne knows him.
Yeah,
you know that?
Yeah.
But she didn't. She never heard what you were talking about. That was his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he never talked to me much about his wife.
Now, they had the produce place. Give her a little.
I can't exactly place it. Somewhere there on that main street.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's gone. It was produce and a big shed in the back with a filling station in front. And a sort of a store. And all he wanted was a shed. And when he rented it, they had to rent it from the oil company. And they wouldn't even have the building. They took the filling station. So he told his wife that he'd stock the whole thing if she'd just run it. And she could get the profit. She said no, she didn't want to do that. So he evidently got somebody else to run it, and she'd drop by to say hello and go in and get money out of the till all the time. And when he didn't know about it, and he knew other people were stealing, but he said he couldn't put any blame on them until he found out how much money was going and who was getting it. So he's always held back, see, from saying anything to some of his employees. Somebody came by and says, you know, some of these guys are stealing money. He says, I know it, but I can't do anything about it because my wife's stealing money. So one evening, he finished cleaning up, and he took all the money out of the till, and said he put a $10 bill in there. And she came in, and he was off doing something. He came back, and he went over and opened the cash register, and the $10 bill was gone. And he got her. He trapped his own wife stealing from the till. And he talked sort of matter-of-factly about that, you know, but you can get a little rancor under him.
But just a little.
Just a hint of it, if you listen hard. But it was just like another story.
Yeah.
That's going on.
I heard a little bit, like one time he bought two dresses and they're going to send one to her mother and one to his mother. And he wrote his mother later and asked her how she liked the dress. Mm. And she said, what dress?
She got two, huh?
I thought he was a confirmed full-time bachelor.
Well, he said many times he doesn't like bachelor. He'd prefer to have, you know, either eat out or have somebody cook for him. But I get the impression sometimes he kind of thought of her sort of as a business partner as much as anything else.
He sure picked Obama.
It worked out.
According to what he said.
Well, now you see, he has a policy of not talking about people. So I get very little from him. Old man Boyd used to spend a lot of time over there, but he didn't go into that either.
Oh, I got so tickled when I got home yesterday thinking about him, about what Buck said about him and those dogs. That's one of the funniest stories.
He said it was stealing.
Who told you about what Buck said about him? That's his brother.
Yeah.
We're going down the lane. And he still had this beautiful place on his mind. And he's thinking about Mac. He said he had a brother. He could have anything he wanted. It hadn't been for gold.
And see, Mac had just told me about 3 days before yesterday, this week, sitting there talking, and he was talking about his baseball days and how somebody offered to bet him that he couldn't hit off of him. Bet him $25 back in 1918 or something like that, which is a lot of money. And he said, but I didn't bet. I don't bet. I don't smoke. I don't cuss. What else? Oh, he doesn't drink either. In other words, he doesn't have vice one. He lost everything because of dogs. That does make a lot of noise.
Hello. Yeah. Just fine.
Well, I don't think his dog did it.
I'll get her. Maybe that is it. We had a new telephone man, babe. Just an 8-part line, and it still is. But I haven't had any trouble with it since he came up here. And when he was standing right out there, I told him, I just said it plain to him, you know. I said, you're looking at the man now who has had the worst telephone service of anyone in the United States. But he said, I know you've had a hard time. And you know he fixed me up. And he put in a new a phone, and he put a line on it long enough to go way out there. I think your...
That's my charge is there.
Yes. Yeah, there's a hose right down yonder at the shed.
Let me go. Yeah, under the shed over there. Go play in the hay. We'll be out in a while.
Never tell you where it's you. But don't stay in long. You need to use that. Suzanne, I see. She hasn't. See, I haven't had any. And she hasn't had any chance to. I just wanted to hear you talk a little about this. There's not a soul. I've not had it. See, Buster won't talk to me. Did he ever talk to you?
His store is right small.
Yes.
Every now and then you'll get something out of him, but...
But he's short.
Yeah. But you tend to not try to get too involved with him because he gets off on his jokes.
Yeah.
And they're burdensome.
Well, they are.
Every now and then they're all right, but...
Now, you haven't had any traffic with his brother.
No, I've never contacted him.
Yes.
I talked to him one day.
You don't want to go out of your way. Mm-mm. But now he'll just go right along with you, talk just like you're talking.
Mm-hmm.
If I could get him over here, or if I could go over there, he'd do better here, you see, because he wouldn't have any interruption. Yes, sir, and he'd carry on. And he'd be at it supper time. And you see, Buster don't have that here. Now, let me tell you, what was that you were saying about old Jack Herring? You see, he even knows Jack. You saw him over there. He come over there one morning at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, that was, this is Sunday. I reckon that was about Thursday. He came over across the street to get his Volkswagen fixed. He got there at about 5 o'clock in the morning. Of course, the guy who does the work on the car seldom ever shows up till about 10 or 11 or noontime. And he messed around there, and Jack had, of course, he has to be drinking beer if he's not working. And I guess telling God, whenever he starts anything, he starts at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, if he starts fishing, he starts at 4. If he starts drinking, he starts at 4. If he starts working, he starts at 4 o'clock. He just gets started. And he does love to drink, that Jack does. Then he was there all day long, and he got a little bit drunker all the time, and finally he got talking, said his tooth was fretting him a little bit. He's sitting there, and this other guy, Jack Sanders, who lives right next door to Buck Weaver, drives a red and white pickup. And Jack was sitting, and Sanders was there, and he said, "Well, all right, I'll take care of it." And he goes over and gets a pair of vice grip pliers and walks over and says, "Which one is it?" He says, "This one." And rips it right out. No more bother than that, and all he just spits a little bit of blood and settles back down and starts drinking again. Talking. He did that the year before with Buster. That Buster's not quite so sterile. His tools are rusty, and this one was sort of clean, see.
Greasy.
Yeah. Buster doesn't have one new tool at all. This is a shiny pair of vice grips. It looked, never looked like it'd be all right. This is the idea of getting your tooth pulled in Buster's shop. It's enough to make you die.
Now you haven't got in with the animal business. You would have to go home. You've heard him talk about him, I guess.
Oh, I know him. Like, I was out at his place one day messing around and talking about pigs and hogs and things, but not his dogs.
What was you doing out there?
Just talking to him about it. It was up for sale. Norman was looking for property.
Oh.
So we just got talking about animals.
And you don't know his wife?
Oh, I talked to her. I've never opened up any conversation with her. He picked her up hitchhiking on the interstate.
That's what I wanted to know.
She was hitchhiking on the interstate, and he picked her up, and that was 3 years ago. He came into town, and he had this woman with him. And after a long time, it was sort of considered that they were married.
They leave it on me.
And then they got talking about, oh, they're going to get a divorce. Well, that was hard to do because they weren't married. So I think finally they got up and got married. Okay.
There's one right out yonder.
Go do it under a tree, Maria.
There's a out there in the trailer.
So I think they got married. And Jack fell out with her. Oh, they got into a fight. I've forgotten what in the world it was. Started beating up on each other.
Well, it'd have to be anything.
And they got into a fine fight. So he was sure enough going to divorce her. And they separated, and then they got back together. But they still weren't married. That's right, they still weren't married. He's talking about going to divorce her. But when they got back together, they were determined to get married. And sure enough, they took a marriage license out. And Mary Weaver's looked in the paper, and there it was. Marriage license for Jack Aaron, whatever her name is. And so they set a date. And I think it was on a Saturday. And first thing in the morning, there's Jack down at Weaver's, drinking beer. And stayed there all day long, drinking beer. Getting drunker all the time. He wasn't showing up for the wedding. He didn't show up. I don't think they're married yet. He sure made a brave attempt there for a while. I don't think best I know of, I didn't hear that they ever got down, but I sure remember that because it was they list it in the paper when you apply for it, and Mary was joking, wondering if those things, how long they lasted, the license, you know, if they expire. He was drunk all day long. And he didn't even dare. He didn't show up at all. She didn't come down there either. But they get along fine. You know. They really fit together.
Yeah, it looks like they ought to.
They really do. They were going into town one day, and they got about to Payne's Prairie, and she says, "Hell, Jack, turn this car around and go back home." He says, "What's the matter, woman?" He says, "I left my eye at home. I can't go to town without my eye." "Go back to Orange Lake and get her eye."
Mark Lane.
Ha ha ha. Now, she's an animal person.
Yes.
She sure is. You don't even have to listen to her much to know that. You just have to talk to her 10 minutes. And she's talking about animals before 10 minutes is up, more than likely.
Yeah.
Pig or something, and she loves them.
She loves them.
You should have seen her messing around with that great big old sow. Good Lord, sow was a get out, and it must have been a half pet anyhow. And
that thing
came out grunting so big, I was about ready to climb a tree. It sounded like it was going to kill somebody. But she was just talking.
Can I look around in the house?
Not in the house.
Stay out, Maria. Look around the barn.
Okay.
That's her. That's Maria.
Old Jack and Buster were buddies for so long. And that's the best thing that Buster ever told me. Some of the incidents when Jack was under a car and the urge would hit him to go fishing. Now, he can give that and make it circumstantial.
Those are some characters, because Jack is a hard worker when he's working.
Yeah, but see, Jack's wore out now. He's rusted out. All his plumbing is just, I don't see how he lives.
Oh,
and
he's going down fast.
Buster gave him up. He gave him up a long time ago. Buster told me, he said he got so he was burdensome to him. He'd go up there and eat all the time, but he wasn't doing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Florence Van Arnum, you know her.
Mm-hmm.
Florence said when she was growing up and living over here, up here at the bar, that Buster and Jack would get a can of beer and go out and sit in a car out there on a country road and talk for half a day. Just talk.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
Yes, sir. And you can see how they would. You can see Jack. Now, Buster, you see, it seemed like he's a little bit flighty to talk, but you see, he talked to Jack when he wouldn't talk to me. But I thought maybe he'd talk to you.
No. He'll get on this sort of lengthy subject once in a while, but no. It's hard. He keeps breaking out in his jokes too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fiction and facts are
I
like
think him. He's changed a little bit in the last year, has he? Recently. He used to talk to me. Oh, he just talked for a long time. Yes. Oh, he'd talk about interesting things.
Oh, well, he'll get into that. Oh, I wish I'd remember that conversation about the moonshot and a few things like that.
Yes.
Now, that was his speculation on these things.
Yeah.
He'll speculate on that. He'll get some sort of seriousness going about some of these things.
Yeah.
Some speculation.
Yeah. Yes, but I mean, he got sustained. He has sustained talk on good subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he has with me in the past, but not in time recently. See, I don't wear well, and especially see, I'm too sustained from him. My charge is a little too great. Much for him, you see. It didn't used to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've been getting that way because I do too much damn desk work. That'll kill you.